This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt here with my little brother Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
How'd you know that, Fred?
Know what?
What we're doing.
I don't, usually.
How was the 4th Avenue Street Fair?
Awesome. But before we get to that, let's invite people to visit us at fredandjeff.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. And even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on TuneIn Radio and iTunes.
Very nice.
So, yeah, last weekend was the 4th Avenue Street Fair.
Correct.
It was a blast. We had hundreds of thousands of people roll through 4th Avenue. And
seriously, hundreds of thousands?
About 300,000 people.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that...
Well, you know our friend Tony Pedroza?
Of course.
So he works with Tucson...
Los Changuitos Feos. He's on their board.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
But he works for a sanitation company.
Tucson...
Recycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he took care of all of our needs. And actually, if you need your event catered with porta potties, trash receptacles, all that kind of stuff, Tony Pedroza is your guy. He was hysterical because at the street fair, we usually have a lot of, street fair food.
Oh, like roasted corn on the cob.
The roasted corn.
Oh, man, so, and that is super messy.
Yeah, Tony used to tell us, he could tell you how many people were at the event based on the number of rolls of toilet paper that he uses in the porta-johns.
Not that he uses personally,
no,
but that get used.
That get used. So... Yeah, we estimate close to 300,000 people. We had over 400 juried artists.
Juried, what does that mean?
That means they don't get into the show unless they go through a process. So we're not, the show is every single artist that comes to the 4th Avenue Street Fair, and there's a spring fair and there's a fall fair, they go through a jury process, and we don't bring in people who resell things. So we do not bring in people who buy from China or India or anywhere else and then bring it and resell it. Every single one of our artists on 4th Avenue create those items themselves. Paintings, sculpture, there's ceramics, there's clothing, just all, soap, food. There's a salsa guy. I actually bought a bottle of Bloody Maria mix. It's sold as Bloody Mary mix. And it was just phenomenal. It's made here in actually that product is made here in Arizona.
That's very cool.
I got to meet Robert Shields. Let's see if you remember. Remember Shields and Yarnell?
Shields and Yarnell, is that a band?
No, they were back in the 80s ish, 70s,
yeah.
80s.
Yeah.
They made mimes cool.
A day?
No, they had a week. They had a weekly variety show.
Where?
On national television.
Shields and Yarnell?
Yeah, Robert Shields, and I forget Yarnell's last name, but she's...
They did mummery?
Mime. They were mimes.
Mimery?
Yeah, so he was at the show, and we got a little private...
He was at what show?
The 4th Avenue Street Fair.
You call that a show?
It is a show.
Okay.
I mean, we're putting on the one, a phenomenal... I won't steal... P.T. Barnum's Greatest Show on Earth, but mm-hmm. it is the phenomenal show in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
The penultimate show in Tucson.
Mm-hmm. So Shields and Yarnell.
No, just Robert Shields was there, and he is an artist, aside from his skill as a professional mime, the acrobatics and all that involved. But he actually does paintings, and they were really cool. But he, before the show opens up in the morning, all the artists are sort of milling around and talking to each other. And we were out there and we had a little conversation with him. And he actually told us, and we'll make this a trivia question for later in the show. And we'll actually call us now. Because I'll give the question away, or the answer away. But Robert Shields,
yes,
invented the robot. You know, the dance, the robot.
Really?
He is the guy who invented the robot.
And so if I go on YouTube and look up Shields and Yarnell,
yeah,
there will be something of him in the 70s or 80s doing the robot dance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's the trivia question?
Well, who invented the robot?
You just...
So call us at 520-428-5104 and tell us who invented the robot.
Oh, Fred.
But it was hysterical because, I mean, I was there with the event director. And
the event director of
the 4th Avenue Street Fair.
Okay, and who's that?
Curtalis.
Okay, good guy.
Yeah, we were sitting there, standing there talking to Robert Shields and another artist who was at the fair.
Did you know how world-renowned this gentleman is? Robert Shields?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
You were standing there like, that's Robert Shields.
No, I didn't know that. But when he was introduced to me, I was like, wait a second. I know who you are. And he's like, yeah. And he's actually a very humble guy. He's like, fame is a seductive mistress that will destroy your life.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And does he live in Tucson?
No, he lives actually in Sedona.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, he's up
in Sedona. The Vortex.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, you're there with Kurt. What are you doing?
And we're talking. And
is this when you twisted your ankle and fell down like a sack of wheat?
I did not fall down.
Okay.
I did twist my ankle.
Okay, so.
No, I twisted my ankle during setup on Thursday.
Ah.
It was awful.
Rookie setup.
The end. Yeah, exactly. So we were sitting there, and we were talking with Robert and a couple other artists. And somehow, the robot came up, and he literally just went into a thing.
A robot routine?
Yeah. And
did you get any of this on video?
No, but it's so Kurt and I walk away and we look at each other and it's like, did we just get treated to a private performance by Robert Shields? And we're like, yeah, we just did. It was like phenomenal.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Pretty cool.
So yeah, and a lot of people were there. It was a great time.
So what you're trying to tell all of our listeners, Fred?
Get ready for the December Street Fair.
Because you never know who you're going to meet at the 4th Avenue Street Fair.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, yeah. What else is going on here in Southern Arizona?
Well, coming up very soon.
A weekend with Pablo Picasso.
Oh, man. And I just literally, before we went on air, I got a press release for this show. And so it's a weekend with Pablo Picasso. It's the last
in this season.
In the season for Arizona Theater Company.
Right, right. And by the way, this season's been great, folks.
Oh, my Lord.
If you haven't seen any of the shows, get to this one because, I mean, even Romeo and Juliet, though a Shakespeare classic, was fantastic. The spin they put on it made it so enjoyable. And a lot of people don't know that Romeo and Juliet is like about a 4.5-hour show with, 7 intermissions. I'm kidding, of course. But it's a long show, and it went like that. It was fantastic.
So this Weekend with Pablo Picasso is based on Picasso's writings, but the person performing, and I'm going to butcher his name.
Uh-oh.
His name is Herbert Singueza.
Singueza.
And he actually is the author. He created this show. And during the show, during each performance,
he creates a piece of art.
Several pieces of art.
That are Picasso's.
They're Picasso. Not only like canvases, mm-hmm, but sculpture as well.
Yeah, yeah. The show's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, folks, get your tickets because the run starts pretty quick here.
April 4th.
Yeah, it starts next week.
No,
it starts this week.
Well, the previews are going on, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, get your tickets to that.
Yeah, it is going to be the treat of the season, I think.
And thanks for those of you that went out and made the Conquistador Classic of Tucson a huge first-time success. It was great. Thank you so much.
Okay, so
look forward to doing it next year.
How many people were there? The paper reported 50,000.
No.
The paper reported 50,000.
Maybe a day.
No.
Dude, there were a bazillion people out there.
All I'm saying is 50,000 for your event, 300,000 for mine.
Well, but we only...
Next.
The Conquistadors only raise $1 million for kids.
Next.
How much do you guys raise for the community?
Next. Okay, so the 96 Valle,
there you have it.
Ballet
Thank you.
Celebration is coming up, presented by St. Luke's Board of Visitors, and that's April 11th
right.
at the Mountain Oyster Club. So check out or go check out the St. Luke's Board of Visitors for information on that. And that is a big fundraiser for the first fundraising organization in the Old Pueblo.
That's right. And don't forget, get your tickets to the Centurion event at Rito. It's the Great Disco Ball or Boogie Down to Funky Town, May 9th. Go to thecenturions.com and purchase your tickets today, because that is going to be an epic party.
Yeah.
Of course, all proceeds for this year's Centurions party.
Go to the Centurions.
No.
That's your lobster fest, right?
No, no, no. Tunadito.
Oh.
Tunadito, where no child grieves alone. So not only are you going to have a great time with the Centurions and maybe 5,000 of your closest friends, but you are going to help some families in need. So thanks for that.
I thought for sure that was for your weekly lobster parties.
Yeah, that's the key.
Lobster and steak parties.
I want to know what the 4th Avenue is doing with that slush fund that you guys raised for the 4th Avenue Street
Fair. You know what? It costs us a lot of money to put these things on. We have to pay for police officers.
Oh, yeah. See, I love it. So give me a hard time for the things that I'm involved in, but of course, you are above reproach.
I just got a bill for paying for police officer protection.
Hey, thank you for supporting our local cops.
Well, they appreciate it.
Finally, unless you get something else.
That's it for me.
Finally, folks, ladies and gentlemen, it's the countdown to the Chieftains. The Chieftains are coming back to Tucson February 23rd. 2016, the Tucson Music Hall, the countdown, you heard it here first, countdown to the Chieftains, my favorite Irish band coming to Tucson. Get ready for that one. And I think it's time we take a break.
Absolutely.
So stick around. We got lots and lots more here on The Fred and Jeff Show, and we'll be right back.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt here with my little brother Jeffrey.
Dun, dun, dun! Hola, Tucson!
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
That's Jeffrey. Correct, Fred.
And we were just in the beautiful studios of St. Cecilia, downtown Tucson.
Yeah, boy, that is a nice facility.
But we had decided to travel down a way.
And why did we do that, Fred?
Because someone offered us beer.
Cheers! Ah!
So we're sitting over at Barrio Brewery with the owner and beer master.
Beer master.
Brewmaster.
There you go.
It's Dennis cool. Arnold. Dennis Arnold.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. So we need to tell some tales out of school, Jeff.
Oh, I don't know any tales out of
school. Is it about your great-great-grandmother, Sarah?
No.
No, well, I guess she would have been our step-great-grandmother.
Your step?
But she passed away. Our grandmother was, great-grandmother was Lupe. Lupe Dalton.
What was the Sarah married?
Sarah Levin married our great grandfather.
Oh, okay.
And they had four children together, but then she passed away of some disease.
Right, sadly.
And then our great grandfather remarried, and Lupe Dalton is we're the descendants from Lupe.
And she would have been married to the first brewer in the territory of Arizona.
Who was that?
Sarah.
Sarah was the first brewer?
No.
The Levine family.
Oh, the Levine family.
Yeah.
Alexander.
Yeah.
Opened up the Pioneer Brewery in, I want to say it was 1864 or so.
You know, it's funny. It wasn't you. Somebody else, a local craft beer person, was trying to get family secrets. They're like, "What? Do you guys have the recipes for any of the Levine family beers?" Like, wish I did.
Oh, I'd be honest with you. I wouldn't be a drinker of those. Knowing what I do about brewing, and brewing in Tucson, Arizona without the benefit of refrigeration would be next to impossible. you would have to have gotten a wild fermentation that would be alcohol, but what it would have tasted like, I couldn't tell you.
And, you know, probably back in the day, they didn't really care about taste. It was the side effect.
The soldiers from Fort Lowell would ride on. It'd take them quite a time to get from Fort Lowell to downtown. The original brewery was at the base of where Pennington is right now.
Right.
And they'd ride over, and they'd trade bullets and anything else for a beer. So that's kind of, it's an odd way in that the Indians brought beer to Arizona, in that because of the Indian Wars at the time, the military had to come out. Once the military showed up, you needed beer, and it's unintended consequences. So.
It's a beautiful thing. Beer.
Yes.
Need we say more? And Dennis, what is this we're drinking this morning?
This is, I call it Simpatico Stout. It was our Mocha Java Stout on Nitro. And it's a very intricate stout in that it's an oatmeal stout, a chocolate stout, a coffee stout, and a milk stout all rolled into one. We've been brewing it for quite some time, and we have a little name for it. We call it the Breakfast Beer of Champions. So it goes down just wonderful, and think about what you eat for breakfast in the morning.
I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan, always have been a huge fan of the Mocha Java, ever since you started making it. But this is like, you know, WTF, how good is this?
It's the nitrogenation just gives it a whole different character. It's different than...
The nitrogenation?
The nitrogenation.
What does that mean?
Beer is carbonated by nature. So when you start making beer...
So you're saying God makes us beer.
You know, I wonder who exactly did figure this out. You know, you've got to think that everybody kind of equates nitrogenated beers with Guinness. So you think that it was British and definitely not German.
Well, the Greeks and Romans had beer. The Babylonians had beer.
You go back to Mesopotamia.
Yeah, Mesopotamians had beer, that's right.
There's a wonderful book called The Six Drinks That Shaped the World. It was written by a Brit, and it starts out definitely with beer. One of the oldest hieroglyphs ever found was actually the accounting for what they were paying the fellows that built the pyramids in beer. So it's fascinating history, and a very good and colorful read.
So the pyramids were built
on beer
and paid for with beer.
Yes.
Wow.
Cheers.
Here's the beer.
Here's the beer. So the nitrogenated side is that you back way off on the carbonation. And beer, when it starts off as a very sweet liquid, and when yeast is introduced, the yeast consumes the sugar and creates alcohol and CO2. So there's your carbon dioxide. So nitrogenation is you leave that CO2 barely in there, and you pound nitrogen into it at probably three times the rate or the pressurization that you would with CO2. What this does is it provides this weird non-equilibrium, because nitrogen is not soluble in liquids. So as you push it out of the keg, it goes through a special faucet, and the faucet has a very fine screen in it. So as the beer is pushed through there at about three times the normal pressure, all the nitrogen gets rattled out. And so if this were television, you could see this amazingly creamy head that's floating on the top of three almost empty glasses.
Matter of fact, I'll take a picture and we'll post it on the website later.
Yeah. And that's what gives it just a whole, it's a mouthfeel thing. It brings on a whole different a sensory than just, you know, quaffing a cold one after you mow the lawn.
Now, you know, I'd asked you earlier for a growler of this. And you said you couldn't do it because...
It would just end up flat. This is something that has to be enjoyed straight out of a faucet, right into a glass. And when you receive this in front of you, you'll notice this. It'll be like a chocolate color. And that's because all of those little nitrogen bubbles are finding each other, and they're coming out ever so slowly. And you see it rise from the bottom up. So it's almost thinking, you know, where your foam is on top, but it actually starts from the bottom. And it takes a couple minutes to settle out to a beautiful creamy head.
Oh man, yeah.
And it is. It's good. So Barnum Brewery, so let's take a step back for our listeners that don't know your history in the restaurant and beer business here in Tucson. You actually got your start at General Ben's.
Yeah, in General Ben's back in early 1991. My wife and I in 1984 had moved after graduating college, and we moved to San Francisco. And I had a degree in journalism, so what does any good journalist do but bartend? And I had happened through a place that was one of the first brew pubs in America in Berkeley, and then I had my epiphany, and it was such a simple thing. It's like I didn't even realize that you could make small small batch beer and sell it. And it was actually a law that needed to be changed from state to state. And Arizona was still illegal at the time, but it had that big light bulb basically said, if you make your own beer, you drink for free. And so again, we started.
Then you have a lot more friends.
A lot more friends to spend the night, as it turns out.
Right.
And so away we went. So we embarked on an odd little odyssey, and our thoughts were to be the run down to San Diego and be the first brewery in San Diego, because gosh, if you're born in Tucson, that's where you vacation during
right.
the summer.
Right.
And so away we went, and I went down there, and I'm on a typewriter typing up a business plan, because computers weren't quite invented yet for the likes of us. And I went to the city council in San Diego, and they said, no, we will never have a brewery in this town. And I said, oh my God, what are you saying? This is great. And they're saying, no, you go out in the industrial, we'll never have a brewery. Now San Diego calls itself Suds County, USA,
yeah, it's
capital
crazy.
Of craft beer. So, it was quite funny. That said, if you go back and look at the history of brewing in San Diego, there's a wonderful video documentary called Suds County, USA. And you can find it online, but it's fascinating in that all of the icons of the business, your Stones and your Ballast Points and all these brewers, they had interviewed a few years back. And as it turns out, it would have been the worst decision of our life, because it wasn't until, that was in 1986, and it wasn't until probably 1997 or 1998 that people in San Diego took to craft beer. It was story upon sad story about GABF medal winning beer breweries closing left and right.
Wow.
The only thing they wanted to drink in San Diego was Corona or its like. And so it took some time, and it was very fascinating. And I just happened across that video when I was at the History Museum in San Diego a few years back, and it was showing, and my wife goes, or my kid goes, hey, you're in the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, we got more, folks, with Dennis Arnold from Barrio Brewery. So stick around for more here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Rostad. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
And there are lots, ladies and gentlemen.
And
we
invite you
at least two.
And we invite you to visit us at friendjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and you can even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on iTunes and TuneIn Radio.
And folks, write this number down. Write this phone number down, because it will be very important for you within the next 25 minutes to know this phone number.
What is that phone number?
The Fred and Jeff Show hotline.
Do you know it or
it? Yeah, it's 520-428-5104. 520-428-5104. All right, so we're here talking to Dennis Arnold, the owner of Barrio Brewery and Gentle Ben's.
Drinking his beer.
Drinking his delicious breakfast beer. Thank you, Dennis. And we were chatting about earlier about San Diego, your adventure in San Diego, and how you dodged a major bullet by the San Diego folks telling you to go away because they weren't ready for craft beer in San Diego. And then fast forward, you end up in Tucson. What are you doing in Tucson?
Well, we decided to move home after being soundly defeated, and something else had happened at the time. The law had to be changed state by state in order to allow craft beer. And so in late 1987, the Arizona legislature took it up and passed the microbrewery law. So we moved back.
Which, by the way, didn't they just amend to increase the volume?
They just amended again to increase it to 200,000 barrels. There will be a signing up in Phoenix. The governor's going to rush in and sign it, and it'll be much, there'll be much fanfare up there about it. 200,000 barrels is a lot of beer. I mean, that is, I would never want to go there because that's just it'd almost be like having a job rather than making beer at that point. And that's just a no.
Okay, so you come back to Tucson, it's 87.
And we start trying to put together different plans. And
but still with creating a brewery.
Still with creating a brewery, because now we're in Tucson, we're going like, Tucson, you know, I've had enough friends here that'll drink beer.
Our Uncle Paul by himself will.
Uncle Paul I went to kindergarten with at Casa Elizabeth Seton.
We went to Casa Elizabeth Seton as well.
That was a wonderful article that they had in the paper about Potter Place.
In the
last couple of weeks. And I said, you know, what about the one thing I remember from 1965 was everybody kind of fought over being able to play the triangle in the band.
Yeah. Now that you're the conductor, and I get to be the conductor.
Yeah, so it's weird what your mind locks onto from that time. That place was cool, and there was nuns, and I remember the triangle, and I remember the little tadpoles swimming around the green pool.
That's cool.
That's the history of Tucson, and that's a wonderful thing. So my wife and I finally got it going at when we had walked in. And it's the oddest story. I was meeting people trying to raise money. I said, let's meet at Gentle Ben's. So we go down there, and it's not Gentle Ben's at all. It's a place called Dirtbags West. And I was like, oh, my Lord, what happened while I was gone?
A lot of us asked that question.
And so we end up sitting down and going, wow, is there an opportunity here? Could it be this, you know, this? And so through a series of fortunate events and acquaintances, we were able to negotiate having them move out and us move in. And so that went along fine, but what really made it possible is there was no opportunity there because it was a 6-month get out lease, because the Marsh Foundation was always going to tear that down and build a monolith called University Commons, which today you see 3 17-story high rises sitting there on Tyndall and First Street. Well, you go back 25 years or 30 years ago, that was actually the plan for that whole block. They were going to build this thing with Charlie Keaton's money.
No kidding.
Yeah, so when that didn't work out, they're like, uh-oh, you know, we need somebody to run this place until we can get somebody else. So I was able to do that and then at the same time negotiate, hey, if you knock me down, there's going to be a liquor license on the block, maybe I get first right. So that's how we ended up in 1995 moving to our current location. And today it's as strong as ever, and I've got to say that being from Tucson, there's one thing that you live for. And that's the Arizona Wildcats. And this is such an exciting time that that is going to be the funnest place to be on the planet when the Cats go 6-0 in this tournament.
I like to hear that. So you're at Gentle Ben's, you're doing great work, and then how did you come up with Barrio?
Well, Barrio was a sense that when we moved, we had known, when we moved to the new Gentle Ben's in 95, we had kind of known that if we were going to grow, it couldn't be there. So after we stabilized, because we were closed for quite some time, going through all the West University Neighborhood Association hoops and things like that, we started seeking out a nearby location that we could move the brewery to. And so I came across a lovable little building at 800 East 16th Street, which was a Quonset hut built when Harry S. Truman was president. And it was 1947, so it was probably a military surplus, you know, 20,000 feet of just tin and nothing else. But who had been here in the 90s was somebody, you know, it's Tucson's a small place. It was the Stringer family running Tucson Farm Meats. So what they had done is they had put in 4,000 square feet of cold boxes and when they're in the meat business. And then lo and behold, sleepy little town of Tucson gets rattled by the big corporations coming in when City Meats got bought up by a national, and they pretty much ran all the little local guys
out.
Oh,
yeah, certainly, yeah.
So then what happened was this building everybody was looking at saying, it's not worth any. It's worth less than anything because knocking it down and getting rid of those cold boxes, and it's an old warehouse. Who would want it? And I come along, and all I see is cold rooms make cold beer, and walked in and negotiated with the Stringers, paid them their asking price, and in 1999, before the purchase, I went downtown and said, "Hey, this is what I want to do," and they said, "That's a great idea." And then I bought the building, got my plans together. And then walked back in, and they said, "What?"
So, know anybody that was on the city council at that point?
I know somebody at the city council at that time, and it was, I think that I had irritated this councilman who had just right in the corner of his little ward, this building existed, and some things transpired there that are still pretty raw to me 16 years later.
Right, well,
I can just put it this way. This would probably be, former Councilmember Rossack might attest to this, the vote was 5-1 to finally get me in after some years. And the ward person, that councilman was the only no vote. How often would you see that? It was unheard of at the time.
Right.
Where everyone was like, why are you doing this? So after 3,000 days from the time that I walked in and bought this building, we got open.
Wow.
And it was just a time that was too bad because I would like to have been in business for those years. But again, everything works out for a reason.
It does.
I look at it that my youngest daughter was, she was just maybe 1 year old at the time. So instead of busting my hump on this project, I was able to spend pretty much every day with her. She'd drive around with me everywhere. So I don't regret that time at all.
Oh, I bet you. That's great. And how old is she now?
She's 16 years old. And
now she's driving you around.
You know what? She's my third designated driver. and she's just...
Daddy's been testing some beer today, darling. Yeah.
Can you come pick me up?
I mean, all my kids have their things. She had actually come in. She's just crazy smart. Annapolis had flown her out last year to spend a week at the academy trying to talk her into going Navy and stuff. And she's just got crazy engineering skills. But last summer, she came in all summer and learned how to brew. And so she's
the exit strategy?
And she's my wife says absolutely not. Our kids, we will not be second generation restaurateurs. She wouldn't do that to her kids. So I said, okay. I mean, my oldest is graduating this year from the university with a degree in architecture. My middle's in Eller right now. My youngest will be an engineer. She says they don't need the restaurant business because it's a very tough life. So I'll just have to stay around forever.
It is a rough life.
It can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of hours.
Yeah, a lot of hours. But, you've got to have fun and you got to enjoy the people you work with. And if you got that, then I don't care what the job is.
That's awesome. So let's talk about you are doing a lot of things now to be, more philanthropic in the community.
Well, let's take a step back. You've always been philanthropic.
Yeah, I've always been part of groups that have been philanthropic.
Like the Centurion.
And aside from we're all Catholic schoolboys here, and I don't know for how many decades.
You went to St. Peter and Paul?
Yeah, I went to St. Peter and Paul. Yeah. Then my brother Mike had a disagreement with the principal, so the last year I went to St. Ambrose. So
the whole family got that.
Sister Rose Bernadette, I think, called him incorrigible, and it meant something to my dad at the time. So anyway,
and off you went.
So right, but then what happens is that all the fun days all of a sudden become free beer days. And so we've always done things like that. But I thought in a bigger picture, what we can do to bring. It's easy to just write a check and mail it out. I like bringing in multiple people or multiple ideas on a thing. So that's kind of what we set out to this year. We're pretty much topped out this year for our giving. But it's bringing in, like with the dog wash coming up in a couple weeks here. It's a lot of fun, but we're benefiting the girls' roller derby team. We're benefiting the Humane Society of Arizona. And I think also just everybody in Tucson coming out is going to benefit from seeing 1,000 dogs get together and not fight. It's the coolest event ever. Yeah, Ales and Tails is what it's called. It's a couple weeks from Sunday.
All right, so folks, stick around. We got a lot more to talk about these great events that are going to happen at Barrio Brewery with Fred and I here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, the Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt with my little brother Jeffrey.
Hola, Shukshon.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, culture, and beer make living in Tucson. It's in Arizona, Southern Arizona.
So gosh darn, what Southern Fred, after one beer, you're slurring your Southern Arizonas.
Southern Arizona.
And
so we are.
And of course, sitting. Beer is part of the culture.
That's right. Beer is part of our family heritage.
That's right.
So we're sitting over here at Barrio Brewery on East 16th Street, talking to Dennis Arnold, the Tucson's master brewer.
Proprietor.
Actually, I think, Dennis, you were probably one of the first brewers in Tucson.
Yeah, there were two just prior to me, and one was a little extract place called San Francisco Bar and Grill. They shoved a little brewery in one of those
Wilmont
places.
Yeah, Wilmont or something, yeah.
And then the second was, I feel so bad. I forget their names. It was a very small, kind of more of a larger homebrew setup. Ray Bryce and his wife had set it up, and they were in and out of business pretty quick because it's, you know, they were just making beer thinking they were going to keg it and then sell it to places as opposed to over the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a pretty rough way to go. So right now, Tucson is really experiencing a vibrant brewing community. There's more breweries opening up every day.
No kidding.
I think a lot of them, that they're doing it in good fashion is where they're starting small, making sure what they have people like, and then if they do, then expand. A bunch of firefighters got together and did Sentinel Peak out on Grant.
Oh, that's right.
Next to the Trader Joe's there. And they're showing where they started small, and now they're, you know, they're moving up. So we
got a young guy on 4th Avenue in Stephen Paul's property.
That's what I understand. The Steelers.
Yeah, he's going to open up probably next year or so.
Yeah,
a beer or a whiskey?
Beer.
Because there's a whiskey
Stephen
guy.
Paul's already.
Stephen Paul started there with the Del Bach. Mm-hmm. The whiskey,
right?
But they've moved out somewhere else, and so it's the same location, but they're putting a brewery
operation. And then you got restaurants like 1702 that, you know, that Austin is our buddy Austin.
They're just bringing in all sorts of craft beer,
right?
Yeah, and then well, that's another touch on the Ronstadts. Didn't your uncle Johnny work for Stephen Paul making mesquite for?
Yes, he did.
Years ago.
Yeah.
where aren't the tentacles of the Ronstadt family wrapped around Tucson?
You cannot swing a stick without hitting one of us.
Well, that's good because most people want to swing a stick,
and you.
So yeah, it's
true, Fred.
It's a lot of fun. Right now, I mean, it's going north of 60 or 70 breweries in Arizona.
Wow.
You look at Colorado and California that are probably north of 500 or 600. So people see a lot of growth. I hope that it's done responsibly. In the 90s, it was done poorly, where money really poured into the industry and a bunch of people that did not know what they're doing raised money and hired whoever to do what. And it just worked out poorly.
And these are probably just guys who were making brewing in their bathtubs and decided, let's start a business.
It was actually worse than that. It was guys deciding that somebody somewhere could brew beer and they could raise money. And so they went out and said, hey, let's give me $1 million. We're going to do a brewery. Then he'd go out and find a brewer and go out and find a restaurateur. It's the guys, the organic people that are like, God, I can brew a good beer. I want to give it a try. Iron John, his bottle shop in town. You know, he's an epic home brewer that took things way above what you'd think homebrew would be at his house. People like that.
Iron John
Atkinson. He's down just south of Plummer off of Broadway. He's got a little brewery there, and all he does is bottle with a little tasting room. So you're seeing all kinds of hybrids. In the 90s, there was big, you know, these big hitters came in with millions of dollars, like Habanero Brewing Company, which was up at the place that was formerly the Rose at La Paloma,
mm-hmm.
and that was an epic failure of millions of dollars. And then you had guys that were just here and there, and people were throwing money at them, saying brewing's hot. And then all of a sudden, you saw. You know, if you look at the chart, you just saw things really go into the toilet because people were putting really bad beer out.
And well, that hurts all you guys.
It gave the whole industry a very dark mark. So now the growth that you're seeing is being controlled somewhat, and it's being controlled in a lot of odd ways. The equipment manufacturers really ramped up in the 90s with adding space and adding equipment to do so. And now they're not. They're saying, we're going to make equipment just as fast as we can make equipment. And for example, we're going through an expansion here, and I ordered the tanks before Thanksgiving, and I will see them right around Memorial Day.
Wow.
And that used to be a 6-week turnaround and not a 7 or 8 month turnaround.
Well, so, yeah, the guy on 4th Avenue said that his issue is waiting for those guys to manufacture equipment.
Yeah, and the second challenge will be hops. Right now,
that's
the hottest thing in America is hops. And you would think it's a crop, and you could just plant it, and they'd get ahead of it, but they really haven't. When you do the
it's
math...
It's a commodity, and like Austin was telling us from over at the 1702, that people are buying years in advance.
Yeah, futures.
Which is exasperating the problem. I mean, as I see it, everyone's going to say, oh, no, I'm going there. So, as it turns out, right about today... craft beer is going to represent 10% of the market of beer. And that's a big deal. You know, I remember when I got into it, it was less than 1%, okay?
Wow.
And now there's this thought that 20% share by 2020 is going to happen, but the math is very difficult to even think that that can happen. But there's two things working. The first thing is, if you think about the beer market as a whole with 200 million barrels, you have the big brewers are in a death spiral. And, you know, God bless them. They've made a lot of beer over time, and they're extremely good at what they do. I mean, when you go and you judge at the the Great American Beer Festival, and you're going to judge an American lager, what you're basically saying is, I can make a beer just like Budweiser. So Bud Miller Coors wins it, depending on how it goes. But for the last 5, 6, or 7 years, Budweiser as a whole has been falling 3% a year. Those are huge numbers if you think about how much beer that they were
well, 3% of $1 billion is right. You know, greater
so
than 3%.
So all that is going to the craft beer?
No, it's the market as a whole is down. Craft beer is up, but craft beer is not gaining 3% of the market a year. They're gaining 17% of what they had. So let's say if they're at 10% and they went up 17%, they'd be at 11.7%.
Right.
So it gets down to math. So I had a very good friend of mine who's the chief economist of beer in America. Explain it to me this way. Now that people have a choice for the first time, you know, this generation has its choice for the first time because craft beer is really about a generation old. Children will not drive the car that their father drove, and now they won't drink the beer their dad drank. So it's a fascinating way to look at why it's spiraling down. And you also have the fall of giants like Anheuser-Busch, being an Augie Bush, fourth generation. Now being owned by billionaire Brazilians.
They
sold out.
Right. And so a lot of things happened that where there was a lot of tradition and family. Now there is this very international thought process going on, like, we're going to go ahead and do this. I almost look at it as big tobacco. You know, when the lawsuits hit on Marlboro, you didn't see them go out of business. You saw them go over to China and start selling a whole lot more cigarettes. So I think that that's kind of where Budweiser's going. And there's much chagrin in the industry because of the Super Bowl ad where they said, you know, we don't make any pumpkin peach beers. We just make greatness or whatever. And the whole craft industry was like, oh, my God, blasphemer. Yeah. I was like, that's so funny because the craft industry has been taking shots at, you know, factory beer forever. So it's a tit and tat. And what makes it even funnier is that InBev, you know, that's the name of the conglomerate, the Brahma, a Brazilian brewery, bought Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, is that they're now buying up craft brews.
No way. They
just bought a Elysian up in Seattle, who their actually slogan line was having something to do with corporations suck. And now they're owned by the corporation.
They're owned by the man.
Yeah, exactly. They're a lot of fun. And so that's a one hard one. And so the breweries that are selling to the mega breweries, you're like, well, we just had to make the right decision. And I totally understand that. It was like some years ago, and if I remembered, I wouldn't mention who the restaurant was, but it was one of the original Tucson Originals. And he got a lot of heat because he sold out to, like, it was a national chain that came in and bought his location or whatever. And he just said, you know, I'd make the best decision for my
family.
Sometimes money
is money, yeah.
I had to make the best decision.
I mean, Dennis, so I want to kind of scoot back to the philanthropic part of your business because we only got a couple minutes left, but I think one of the things that makes local Tucson businesses so important to our community is you give back.
Yeah, and that's a big deal.
And so it's really hard to go to a national conglomerate and ask them to support a dog show or dog wash.
Or roller derby.
Or roller derby or something.
The local Humane Society.
Yeah, where here you are,
guy. The local football team. I mean,
the Tucson High Helmet thing.
We're pretty diverse this spring in our fundraising. We had done the Girls Pine Stout, which was an amazing beer that the Girls Pine Out group came and helped us brew, and we were able to raise about $4,000 for Wings for Women, which is a very worthy cause, helping women at risk and in trouble. And the next thing that we're doing is Ales and Tails, and that will benefit the Girls Roller Derby League as well as the Humane Society of Tucson. We generally raise over $5,000 that day for that. The thing that we're working on for late spring is we're trying to raise $20,000 through the sale of beer, where we're going to donate 250 cases of beer, 100%, all of the proceeds, except for the taxes, because the city and the state need the taxes. And we're looking at being able to equip the Tucson High Badger football team with quality helmets. Right now, you got a bunch of kids running around smacking each other in helmets that, if you knew what they were, you probably wouldn't wear them, let anybody wear them. And TUSD is financially stressed and can't do much about it, but up steps a brewery, and we're going to, you know, beer for brains type thing.
Well, let's do a...
beer for brains, love that.
Let's take a step back. Up steps a local, born and bred business guy from Tucson who sees a bunch of local kids who need some help, and it was probably wasn't that tough of a decision for you to say, I'm in, I'm going to help.
No, not at all.
Because you made that decision here locally, as opposed to someone having to send a letter to corporate America somewhere
and hope for the best.
You know, that's the best part of supporting Tucson Original Guys.
Yeah, and that's all you can do. If locals don't support the community, who will?
That's right. And we really appreciate everything you've done. And we can hope you continued success. And by the way, this breakfast beer, delicious. My fourth, is it? I'm not counting. All right, folks, we got to go.
We'll give
something
away.
Oh, what do you want to give away? Dennis, do you want to give something away to our listeners?
I'm going
to
give a case of Tucson Blonde beer for who can answer the question on your show. What's the first year Tucson High won the state championship?
What's the first year the Tucson High Badgers won the football state championship? Get you a case of Tucson Blonde, Barrio Blonde beer. And folks, the phone number, as hopefully you all remember, our phone number is 520-428-5104. We'll talk to you next week here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
Let's talk about the good time. Let's talk about the good time. I wish I could just go back to the days I'm speaking of. When a friend would meet you and a smile would greet you. What this old world needs now is old-fashioned love. Ain't it guitar? Yeah. Preach it, son.
The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by our friends at Tucson Appliance, Unicom Graphics, and Architecture Design Group.